flakes. No ham, no jam, no spam, no cookies, pies, or cakes. I'm only gonna jump for joy. Someone's gonna make me some cheese, peas, pickles, and bananas. Little mayonnaise mixed up right. Just a thing to cure your appetite. When I get older, I can reach the shelf.
I can reach the shelf.
I'm gonna make that crazy salad for myself. I need a block of cheese, a pot of peas.
Get me a banana from a chimpanzee.
One more thing, can you answer me?
Is there any such thing as a pickle tree?
So whether you're a pizza eater, an ice cream treater, or smother your butter with corn. May sound funny, but one of these nights, find yourself with the craving for cheese, peas, pickles, and bananas.
Cheese, peas, pickles, and bananas.
Cheese, peas, pickles, and bananas. Cheese, peas, pickles, and bananas.
I'll never love another now that you've gone away. You left me here to grieve, dear, all alone. It seems I always lose, my dear, no matter how I tried. I'll never love another till the day I die. I'll never love another now that you proved untrue. Without your loving, darling, what am I to do? I spent my life for you, dear, and now you've left me. I can't have built for two, and all my dreams have vanished, dear, with you. I'll find no one to take your place, so I won't even try. I'll never love another until the day I die.
There's J.D. Crow, the late J.D. Crow, and Ricky Wasson. We've been featuring that album. It is on the Truegrass record label, and it was to be released back in November of last year, but they postponed it as J.D. Became ill, he did have a chance to look at the project and to hear it before he died on December 24th, 2021, as it was nearing completion. There are 14 tracks on it, and J.D. performs on 12 of the 14. Coming up, you're going to get a chance to hear some poetry from students at Pittsburgh SciTech. Also in our next hour from our streaming Justice Archives, we'll give you a sneak peek at what you're going to be able to hear during this year's streaming Justice program on Monday. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger and Chad Green. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUPFM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, WNJR Washington, WCUC Clarion, PCTV Comcast 21, Verizon 47 Pittsburgh, WMCK.FM, McKeesport, RadioPhoenix.org, Loudspeaker.FM, Fort Collins, Colorado, Audio Now, where you can listen by phone at 515-605-9542, and slbradio.org/radio.
Too many of you cry. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you die. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today. That's right. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. War is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know that we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Picket lines. because our hair is long. You know that we've got to find a way to bring some understanding in today. Got the picket lines and the picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Keb Mo. It's a nice version of that song, isn't it? What's Going On? From the two of them. In a moment, we have some poetry that we're going to feature. Thank you for sticking around with us here at the Saturday Light Brigade.
The Children's Museum of Pittsburgh and Museum Lab are proud to support the Saturday Light Brigade. Time tickets are available at pittsburghkids.org. The museum is open Thursday to Sunday from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. Museum Lab is open on Saturday and Sunday from noon until 5. The Children's Museum of Pittsburgh and Museum Lab are filled with opportunities to experience kindness, joy, creativity, and curiosity. Capacity is limited, social distancing, and masks are required. More information about health, wellness, and tickets is available at pittsburghkids.org.
And coming up on King Day, the Children's Museum will be open from 10 until 5. We'll have King for a Day with the Saturday Light Brigade between 11 and 3, where youth and families can read portions of speeches from Dr. King, an event we've done since 2010, if my memory serves me correctly. Also, you can tune in to Streaming Justice, Monday, January 17th at noon at SLB Radio's internet stream and at the Youth Express internet stream. You'll be able to hear both or the program simulcast across both of the streams. And Streaming Justice is a youth-hosted talk show that connects the teachings and inspirations of or caused by Dr. King to contemporary issues of civil rights. That's happening Monday, 12 noon at slbradio.org/listen and youthexpress.org. Because our studio is currently under construction, and I often mention in the morning how it's coming along, it is really coming along right now. Just about all of the carpentry work is done. Our three new studios are going to be put into place not next week, but the week after. Next week will be some final electrical work as well as carpeting. The classroom tables arrived last week in storage right now. We have, I think, 88 chairs and 12 tables. And 4 bookcases weighing, honest to goodness, I think we have probably 4 tons of material in place right now. And once the carpet's installed, it's going to be really fun to put that all together. The craftspeople are doing a great job, as is the architect and the construction manager. And we're excited. We will be increasing our space from 500 to 3,500 square feet. And you'll know, of course, that it's going to help us do more work with youth during the week. But also, you'll notice a difference, too, because we'll be able to have more youth live on the air with us and be able to accommodate different kinds of groups than we have been able to in the past. So that's all happening. And what got me on this topic was now that we are really in the throes of construction, we cannot have too many youth guests here because we are more or less a construction site. So you're about to hear a feature that was originally broadcast back in February of 2017. I think you'll enjoy it. You'll hear poets from Pittsburgh SciTech. We have students here from Pittsburgh Science and Technology Academy, known as SciTech here in Pittsburgh. They are going to be sharing poems today, courtesy of Ms. Wendy Moore, their teacher, who's here. Let's meet everybody who's here first, though, and talk a little bit about SciTech in general. Because SciTech is a magnet school, kids are from all different neighborhoods, so we'll be talking to about where everybody's from. And let's just go from left to right. We'll start with you. What's your name?
Namal.
And tell me a little bit about yourself, how old you are, where you're from.
I'm living currently in Carrick, and I'm 13 years old.
Excellent. And what grade are you? You're all in sixth, right?
Yes.
And any shout-outs or anything?
Not really.
Can you tell me a bit about what SciTech is like? This is probably your first year there for all of you, I think.
Yeah.
What's it been like?
Well, at the beginning of the year, like, it was kind of new from a transition from elementary school to middle school. At first, it was extremely hard for me to get all my grades up. But then, now it's coming on to the third quarter, it's starting to get more easier and getting better into the routine.
I'm glad to hear that. I think it's pretty tough alone when it's a school as demanding as SciTech is. So you're in a good place. Where did you go to elementary school?
Grandview.
Okay. And let's say hello to the person who is right on your right. Lean up there a little bit so we can hear you. What's your name?
My name is Taj, and I'm 11 years old.
And Taj, what community do you live in?
I live in Knoxville.
And it just out of curiosity, where was your elementary school?
It was Carmel.
And how's it been so far at SciTech?
It's been pretty easy considering how, like, the tests were when we really don't have any. The only hard part about it is that we have to, like, master every test we do and then all the prove-its and things like that.
What's a prove-it?
It's like the test, but instead of us, like, it's just we don't have to have a random grade. We have to get 10 out of 10 to pass it.
So if you miss something, do you need to make it up
and
figure out?
Yeah, you need to redo it.
Well, that's kind of good, right? Because you learn, people learn by making mistakes, I think. So if you mess something up, it's good to be able to figure out why, I guess. Has something been especially, you mentioned mastering things. Is there something you're proud of having mastered recently that sticks out?
Not really, because I mastered everything I tried to do, basically. So, yeah.
That's great. Well, I'm happy to meet you. And let's go right to the person who is next to you. And what's your name?
Kymir Edwards.
And tell me about yourself.
Well, I'm 11, and the elementary school I went to was Grandview. That's all.
How's SciTech been so far?
A wonderful, great experience. Really hard at some times.
What makes it hard sometimes?
Sometimes I don't keep up with my work, but then I try to do it and I get up with it.
You know, even as you get older, it's hard if you don't keep up. Suddenly you can feel like there's no way out. You know, you have so I get a lot of phone calls that if I don't return my phone calls before I know it, I just don't know even where to start. I meant to ask both of you if you had anybody you wanted to give a shout out to or say hello to. Anybody?
Anna, Dante, Larry, and that's all.
I'm glad you know Larry, since that's my name, too. It's nice to meet you. We're going to be hearing poems from each of these students in a moment. Now, Ella got a shout out right away from her sister in Philly. Hello, Ella. How are you?
Good.
And where did you go to elementary school?
I went to Dilworth.
And you live on the north side, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you play drums?
Well, yeah, I used to.
Everybody at Dilworth plays the drums. It's a school where drumming is a big part of the culture there. And I wanted to make sure, Kymir, you live in Beltsover, right? I didn't get a chance to ask you that. So how's SciTech been for you so far?
It's been good. Well, like, it gets hard at times, but I learned, like, correct my mistakes and get everything done.
And this idea of mastery of subjects, a lot of people might be surprised to hear somebody in sixth grade use a term like mastery. What does it mean to master something?
To, like, get it, like, done so it's all correct.
And then you're correct actually – and when we say to master something, what's one of those – somethings. I just want people to understand the culture of your school. You're not just sort of checking things off a list. You're mastering, I guess, concepts.
Yeah. We learn to correct our mistakes.
Oh, that's a great thing. Any shout outs in addition to Sarah?
No.
Great. Well, thank you for being here. And we have one more person to meet. What's your name?
Lucy.
Hi, Lucy. And where are you from?
East Liberty.
And what was your elementary school?
Montessori.
When you guys come, you must know probably most of the people in your class are people you've never met before. Would that be a fair thing to say? Or did you have a lot of Montessori friends that have come to?
Not many people from my old school went to SciTech, so it's a lot of new people.
I can imagine. Is it easy to make friends?
I don't know. I mean, it's middle school, so there's a lot of pressure to be, like, fit in some sort of, like, standard for people.
I don't know. That happens. I can remember that like it was yesterday, starting, for us it was seventh grade, when it changed from elementary to middle school, and there's a lot of changes going on. Do you want to say hello to anybody who might be listening? Any shout-outs?
My mom wants me to shout her out over there. Hi, Mom.
I can barely see her, but is she over there? There she is. Well, I'm glad. So who can tell me about this poetry project and what you all did before we share poems? Can somebody explain what the challenge was or what the writing prompt was, if any?
Well, we had a poem that we picked ourselves. Then we had to make a write like that basically was like that poem in our own way. We wrote it our own way and had to explain it, explain each line. And that's basically what we did.
How interesting, because that, you know, even though you're going to SciTech, you need to learn English and you need, you know, you have language arts, but you're taking at least from my perspective, you're sort of tinkering with a poem the same way that a scientist might tinker with something, right? To analyze it and even to not improve on it, but sort of take off from it and do something different. Was that kind of the way this came together?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds really neat. Well, who would like to share their poem first? I don't know if anybody, if you guys came up with an order. I think that Kymir is all right. You look like you were ready. Are you first? Did I get your name? It's Camille, right?
No.
Camille?
I'm Ella.
Oh, Ella. Oh, gosh. I'm looking. I know that. I apologize. I apologize. I had my notes wrong. Where's Camille is there. And what's here? Tell me about what you wrote.
I wrote about bees. The original poem that I used was Fireflies, and I felt like since we had to change it, I used the bees. So,
do you want to share what you wrote?
Yeah. Honey, flowers are our parchment. Bees flitting, bees glimmering, shining into cooks, practicing baking, six-legged chefs of vanishing messages, fine bakers in flight, adding dabs of delight, singing the May mornings as if they're honeycombs, flickering bees, bees.
That's really nice. And maybe I should have had you share the original poem first. But can you read the original poem to you? Oh, do you not have that with you? That's okay. But you, I like you. That's really great. You picked another one. One of the lines I really liked was six-legged chefs. That really, it's fun to say, but it's really accurate in terms of describing them. Have you learned about beehives much?
No.
There's a lot to what bees end up doing. That's beautiful. Thank you. That was Ella. Who would like to go next? Are you set?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell me about your poem.
So my poem was about mainly the same poem that she wrote, Fireflies. But instead of doing bees, I decided a Trojan because since I'm in a technology type of school and I love computers and all, I decided to do something that involves like hacking or something like that.
Okay, that's what you meant when you said Trojan, like a Trojan horse virus?
Yeah. Or, yes.
Okay, and this is Narnell.
Namel.
Or Namel. So if you get an email from him, be careful. You don't want to open it up. Might be a virus. let's hear what you wrote.
Dark, up all night, virus taking over, money and profit. Then all vanish like dabs of money-hungry bugs taking all of your money. And it is extremely funny. We're Trojans, that's what we do. I'll keep my money away from the bank, I do. Money, money, so funny. Take, 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 make, make, make. Now there's no money from the Easter Bunny.
That was great. Absolutely terrific. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Who would like to go next? Okay. So now we have Chimere, who's right in front of me. Tell me about your poem.
Well, my original poem was The Book of Nonsense, and my poem is The Book of Niceness.
Okay. Is that by Edward Lear, The
Yes.
Book of Nonsense? So you know what? That was my favorite book when I was a kid, and I still have it somewhere. I loved that book. I can't wait to hear what you wrote.
There was a grandma with lemonade, but the granddad yelled, "I want Kool-Aid." There was a girl with lots of shoes, but she always had bad hairdos. There was a granddad who took pills that lived high on that hill. There was a girl who lived in a den, but she didn't have any pins. There was a man who loved root beer floats, and he wanted a moat. There was an old man from Kentucky, and he loved rubber duckies.
I like that book a lot. How did you discover that book?
It was just a poem, and yeah. I liked it. I liked it the most out of all of them.
Oh, I'm glad. Well, you are a great writer. So let's see, Lucy or Taj, who's it going to be? Okay, Lucy's going to be next. Tell me about yours.
Well, I did the same as Namel and Ella's. I did the Fireflies one, and I liked it because it was short, so it was the hardest one to do, and it was like it had like a deeper meaning behind the poem.
Okay, whenever you're ready, let's hear what you wrote.
Darkness. Darkness is the ground we play on. Demons tormenting lost souls of the broken as they walk past, wondering if anyone will save them, hiding pain behind a smile. Tricksters of the brain, deeper thoughts within a simple mind, drowning in feeling, asking for help. Light. Light is the thing we fear most. Even monsters fear something, something so overlooked, something so simple it's scary.
Wow, you're a good writer. Do you really like to write?
I guess my mom likes to write. She went to school for writing. And when I was little, I used to write poems because I was bored all the time.
You're a very good writer. You all are, but that was such an intricate bit of writing. Thanks. And Tosh, tell me about what you did.
All right, so I also did Fireflies, but this time it's about an artist. Yeah, an artist.
Okay, and as you, let me adjust your mic to be sure we can hear you. These are all SciTech students at Pittsburgh SciTech, so there's a transducer inside of your microphone that you need to make move back and forth when you talk into it. And that's going to happen now, so we're all set whenever you're ready.
All right. Artist man, artistic as he can, always putting on a show. The only time he can go is when he's doing one of his shows. Showing shipment and over treat, giving and getting as he goes. His pet monkey has a lot of luck. No one else can be his buck. Grabbing, going, getting a lot of cash. Lighting up the night with his stash. Painting, pitying other people, only certain people trust him. He still makes decent cash. Now he eats what other people give him. No one else can see him in the dust. Taking lights, he cannot be trusted with his might. His monkey very smart, always playing, dancing, sometimes even doing math questions.
You had a lot of alliteration in there. Did you guys notice that too? There were a lot of alliterative phrases. You guys are great. Is there anything else you'd like to tell me about your poems or about SciTech while we have a few more minutes left?
In the class, we had to memorize them instead of looking off the pages. So it was really hard to do that.
I would find that really hard, too. I don't like to memorize things.
Me either. I really don't like to memorize things, so our teacher gave us an option to make a video presentation. So my poem, I made a presentation, and I recorded it, and then I presented it to my class.
That had to be kind of fun. How long was the video that you ended up making?
I'll probably say about 3 or 4 minutes.
And how many minutes do you think it took you to make it? Probably more like hours, right?
Yeah, about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Figure out which the best way to record the video and everything.
Yeah, it can take a lot longer to do something recording it than it can be to just do it live, I think. Any other reflections about the experience you had doing this? No? Ella looked like she was going to say something. Anything else?
It was a fun experience. That was very educational for all of us. That could help us in writing and understanding poems more.
It doesn't get much better than that. I'm really proud of all of you for sharing these on the radio with people who you haven't even met yet, you know, that are listening. And also for SciTech is not an easy school. You're challenged every day, so it's great. Tosh?
I got a late shout out. Shout out to my dad right there. Sitting back there with the pirate's hat.
That would be the man with a big grin on his face because he's so proud of you.
My brother David and my mom at home. Yeah, my brother's asleep. So, yeah, people not going to hurt him. All right, yeah, so that's it.
Great. I have a question. One last question. Will you guys come back with more writing or maybe to tell me about an experiment you did or something you did in class? We'd love to have you come back. And if you're really interested, given your interest in science and technology, we'll tear some stuff apart here and show you how this stuff works, too. We would love to have you come back.
All right.
Thanks to all of you for being here. And thanks to Dr. McCoy, your director at the school, and to Ms. Moore, Ms. Wendy Moore. Thank you for being with us. There you have some of Pittsburgh Public Schools' finest. There are many wonderful students today representing Pittsburgh SciTech. I hope you enjoyed that flashback. Going back a few years, you had a chance to hear the students from SciTech with some great poetry as originally presented. February 4th, 2017. Coming up, a program from our Streaming Justice Archives. You've heard me mention perhaps a few times this morning that on King Day, we will have Streaming Justice, a program that is teen-hosted and connects Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and his principles and inspirations that he has brought to contemporary issues through the lens of teens. That will be coming up on Monday at 12 noon, and you'll be able to hear it on our internet streams at youthexpress.org and simulcast at slbradio.org. And in a moment, we are going to play a bit from Streaming Justice of a few years back as part of our archives. I believe this one is from 2016. It features students from North Allegheny, Woodland Hills, and Propel Braddock Hills. Our longstanding goal of trying to get students from different schools talking to one another about various issues. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger and Chad Green, Deanna Witkowski, and Fat Man D, coming up shortly, next hour. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings on a great group of radio stations and internet radio stations and streaming services, including slbradio.org/radio.
You're listening to Streaming Justice, a youth-led discussion on civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This is Marinos Tiv. I'm 17 years old and a junior at North Allegheny High School.
Hi, I'm Julia Maruca. I'm 16 years old and I'm also a junior at North Allegheny.
Hello, my name is Abraham Richardson. I am 16 years old and a junior from Woodland Hills High School.
I'm Sheed Ansari. I'm 17 years old, a junior at Propel Braddock Hills High School. What I would like to start on is recognize the progress that was made during the Civil Rights Movement and recognize that we still have to make progress in certain areas.
Definitely. The thing about political stuff like this is that it's all intersectional. You can't talk about feminism without recognizing that there's different types of women. You can't talk about race relations without talking about like the different types of people in each sort of group. So it definitely makes sense that we talk about those things in conjunction with one another.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting how, like, every generation has sort of different social issues that are very prevalent to their culture. Like, Martin Luther King, obviously, it was racial equality, which we are still struggling with, unfortunately. But now we also are leaning towards women's rights and gay rights and all those good stuff.
Well, it could be a good and a bad thing. The bad thing is there will always be an issue that we have to address. But the good thing is there's always somebody that will, you know, take the lead and be the voice of a people that are not being spoken for.
Mm-hmm. And I think something that's good that about this intersectional thing is that nowadays that we're recognizing that all these things are connected shows that we've kind of made some progress.
I agree.
One of the specifics we can get into is the specifics of the civil rights movement. Do you think that Martin Luther King took the right stance and nonviolent approach? I'll start with you, Abraham. You think it was the right thing to do to hippie it out?
Yeah, I think that is the right thing to do. Especially today, we need more leaders that will come out and, you know, help to speak against what's wrong and what's right. Because today we're lacking when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, the generation that we're in today, it's bad.
I mean, we can't ignore that there's a lot of problems going on, but And I mean, when we watch the news and stuff, it tends to show that there's a lot of backlash and bad things and violence and brutality going on. And a lot of times it doesn't really emphasize that there has been some progress made. So what about you guys? What sort of examples of good activism have you seen in your community?
I would say my father. We were in community once, and my dad spoke out against certain things. He'll give food and stuff to the neighbors who don't really have enough money to feed their child. My dad ran for certain positions as a mayor and stuff, and like with me and my family, we want to be at a certain level to where we want to help people who don't help themselves, who are not able to help themselves. I guess people today, they're struggling to fight for themselves, but you know, at the end of the day, we need more who will come out for those, you know.
Yeah, and I think those like little guys who do little things every single day to help each other out are the ones who make the big difference. Not one person can fuel a whole movement to fix every problem. We all need to work together. And I think something that's really makes me feel really good is when I see kids in my school even doing little things to help each other. That just shows that we're making progress and we're starting to go past all these things that have been barriers in the past that have held us back.
An example that I've seen in the community or in regular life is I go to Propel, and there are certain students that are outcasted or not even liked because of their sexual orientation. So some people may see it as like, well, these guys are different than us, but there's other people, like normal friends, that just walk up to them and treat them as individuals, not as what they like or what they see themselves as.
And our school has a GSA, too. So, I mean, I think there's definitely, and people, I mean, in classes, we seem to be more open to talking about social issues. Like, we'll bring up stuff. We talk about current events in my AP U.S. History class. And in my school, Murnaz can vouch for this, but we have a branch of Key Club, too, which is focused on encouraging kids to do volunteer work, like volunteering at soup kitchens and that sort of thing, and using something that would look good on a college application as sort of an incentive to encourage people to do that. And some people may say that incentives like that are not the best idea, but I think if it gets people out there doing good things for the world, it's a good idea. What do you guys think about kind of incentives that get people moving?
I don't see it as a bad thing personally. Going back to our GSA at our school, our Gay Straight Alliance, this year especially, we saw a lot more kids joining. It used to be maybe 2 or 3 kids at most. Now we're in like 15, 20 kids, which is awesome. And when we're making the flyers and stuff for people to come to our meetings, we're saying like, oh, there'll be pizza, there'll be ice cream. And I mean, sure, you can see that as like, oh, we're bribing them. But I think the general message of what we are advocating is bigger than that.
Yeah, incentives are good as long as they have a good reason behind them. Like, come for pizza, but learn about this opportunity to bridge the gap between two people that are divided.
Well, everybody likes pizza, so I think that's a good idea, no matter the situation.
To me, I think every little helps. Like the Gay Straight Alliance and the little small groups that are in schools now who are fighting against these certain things that is here today, you know, I think every little helps. Words, music, not talking about the bad music who is like disrespecting certain things, but like positive messaging and certain things. So
I have a question. Do you think that music plays a positive or negative effect on issues?
Music, it plays both roles. I mean, it does disrespect and it does respect. I mean, you know, there you hear music out here these days that, you know, that talks badly about women and about drugs and the community and how much money you can make. And also there's music out there that will talk about these things as Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and so much other positive leaders who try to fight for civil rights.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice.
You know, that talks badly about women.
and technology, the age of internet, and I think that has a very new impact to how we stream our voices and our opinion. The community thing, now we have the opportunity culturally making a big impact, good or want.
Of course, there's a backlash, and like some issues, like the so quickly and spread so fast that there were the spreading of information is so fast that it's hard to contain it. And this is what we really want people to hear, not a whole bunch of people yelling about all these other different things.
I think it's really changed the way that social justice and social advocacy groups spread messages and decide on what messages because they're going to spread, because they don't really decide anymore. It's all these individual little voices instead of one big, like, mass statement.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's no really Malcolm X's or Martin Luther King's anymore, because there's just more websites or movements or hashtags that are trending. There's no voice to speak. There's no message. Some person is standing up here like, this is my message. I want everybody to come together peacefully. There's just an issue, a Black Lives Matter hashtag, and everybody's just jumping on it.
And then you have people, like individual leaders, like Abraham, you were talking about your dad and about the good things that he's done for his community. And I think those are the real heroes of today, the individual little leaders that do little things that mean a lot for their communities.
Yeah, and I think, like Shahid was saying, how anyone has a voice and there's no one person and how it does spread so quickly. Unfortunately, I find that that also can lead to misconceptions and people stereotyping, like teenagers especially, teenagers who share their voice a lot on the internet and really speak their opinions. There's this stereotype that no one takes them seriously, no one pays attention to them. And do you guys think that these teenagers do make an impact, or they are just saying what they want because they can?
Some teenagers might come out and make an impact, but they're making the wrong impact at the same time, especially in the media today. You know, they just say whatever they want.
Most of the time when you see teenagers on, like, CNN or something, they're only there to prove a point. Like, I seen one episode, like, they had a teenager activist, and they only had him there to say, well, this, why are you so mad? Why are you angry? Why are you mad, bro? And they tried to make him seem, as if he was just an angry teenager, like he didn't have a point. So I think we have to be conscious of what other people think about us.
We have to consider that the media has a lot of control over how these issues are presented. Because if they, like Shahid said, when there's a teenager on TV and they edit it, or they cut it, or they frame it in some sort of way that makes it seem like they don't know what they're talking about, they just want to rant in public, that changes the public's opinion. And if we're going to consider what stereotypes are, you have to look at what the media is how the media is promoting these stereotypes.
Yeah, it's very easy to be manipulated. And if you hear someone you respect say something, I think now, if that's the only voice you're listening to, then that's what you're also going to believe. So I think in this age of information, we really need to look at every side of the story and not just one side. And news stations, especially nowadays, they are very stereotyped and often lean towards left or right or whatever for what they believe in. And if you only listen to one, I think you're just hurting yourself, because that's just ignorance, and you need to keep in mind everyone's opinions and everyone's side of the story.
The thing about there being such a wide access range on the internet is that it's possible to hear almost every single side of the story, because everyone who has any sort of connection to an issue can speak their mind on it. And if you look hard enough, you can find any point of view. And even though there are, like, sort of news stations for every political leaning, that means that you can, there, it's laid out for you. You can, if you want to see a more conservative side, if you want to see a more liberal side, if you want to see a side that's in the middle, you can go, you can find the station for that.
But then again, you have to find the right story, because I'm part of the the opportunity where I just listened to one source and I got that one story. But then I go listen to the case. I listen to the case file, and I'm like, well, there's four different stories, and I don't know which one is the right one. So there are different viewpoints out there, but you have to go all around them, collect all the information that you can, and decide on your own what the right story is.
Mm. And I think that's just the work that anybody has to do if they want to be actively engaged in discussion about social issues while being educated about them. Because a lot of people also I'll see people on the internet who, whether intentionally or accidentally, they spread misinformation about things. And it's hard to filter for that, especially since a lot of people, if you're scrolling down Tumblr or Instagram or something like that, you see something and you just think, oh my gosh, that's terrible. Mm-hmm. And you don't always immediately go, all right, I'm going to source check this. I'm going to make sure this is specifically correct.
Right.
I was at the bus stop today on my way here, and there was a guy that came next to me and my mother. And since we're, you know, talking about ignorance and, you know, We were at the bus stop, and he came, and we thought he seemed like a nice gentleman, but out of his mouth, he said, I don't care about Martin Luther King Day. And you know, this man, of course, he was Caucasian, and for you to say that around African-Americans is going to throw off a vibe to where we're not going to like what you say. Like, today, if you have comments on certain things like this, or just keep it to yourself. But, like, for him to come out of pocket and say things like that, and then when my mom told him that's something you should have kept to yourself, and he said that, you know, that he was right. So,
Well, then, you have to take into consideration, was he being racist or anti-racist? Because he could be literally just stating his fact, like, I don't care about Martin Luther King today, but was he necessarily trying to offend you?
I mean, he's standing next to us, you know, saying that. I'm guessing he is trying to get our attention on how we are going to react to what he said.
Well, I don't think he should have said that in front of anyone, like, no matter if he was saying to it a white person or a black person. But personally, I think where that might be coming from, right now we live in a period and in a country where we're not surrounded by, like, there's no war in our country. We don't see violence in our community as much as, say, when Martin Luther King Jr. was advocating what he was. Every day kids were getting shot in the streets, and it was such a bigger priority back then. I'm not saying it's not a priority now, obviously, but I feel like we're not surrounded by it as much, so we feel isolated and we don't understand. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, a youth-led discussion on civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. King.
How do you think that education system can better build a community?
Well, I think that if we're talking about the education system in the context of race relations, something we definitely have to bring up is funding. Now, personally, I'm not a huge expert on this topic. Do any of you guys have, like, specific points of view you want to bring up?
You should bring up that schools should try to be unbiased in whatever they present, because I go to a predominantly black school and I have predominantly white teachers. However, my teachers, their viewpoints are completely unbiased, racist, and they're completely real with each other. Like, hey, I think that this can be looked at both ways. They'll play the devil's advocate if they have to, and they can present a topic to really make sure you're educated and not, you know what I'm saying? So you got to make sure they're unbiased.
The thing about that is there was recently some controversy in some of this, I think it was somewhere in the South, about censoring history textbooks and talking about whether we should sort of sugarcoat the history of the United States when talking about big issues and big mistakes in the past, like slavery and things like that. And if we're going to try to build a community of, like, racial tolerance and acceptance in our schools, we can't be censoring things like that. We need to be able to look at things with open eyes and with, like, a real point of view with all the facts in front of us if we're going to build our own opinions.
I completely agree. Like, in my opinion, if you want to, like, shade history in a light that's just making America sounds so great, that's just exploiting exceptionalism and not pointing. Yes, we have had flaws, obviously. We have done things in history that have not been right, but and we need to accept that those happen. You can't deny that these things didn't happen. But what we do need to do is work to make them, A, not repeat themselves, obviously, and B, talk about them so that these issues aren't prevalent in schools in a lighter manner.
Right. Like, and most issues, if you present it in the right way and you build it up, that they will not be an issue later in life. Like, I have Russian friends, and when I listen about the Cold War, I don't lose them or get mad at them or start throwing shade. No, I just see that there's a certain point in history that we were beefing or weren't getting along, but that doesn't matter now because I'm cool with you.
Mm-hmm.
I can, sometimes it could be easier to like try to sugarcoat history, like the Columbus. Mm-hmm. People are like,
definitely.
Yeah, Columbus, people might say, well, he's this great hero, he has the holiday and everything, but then you don't really get into the actions and the reactions that happen in his discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, recently, especially in this year, there was some changing of Columbus Day in some cities to, I believe it's Indigenous Peoples Day. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I think that's a really honorable thing to do because it's recognizing that there was a sort of covering of history that happened there, where people thought that where people were being told that, oh, this man was super great, he did all these great things, and then really he was abusing people, he was enslaving people. And that's not really something we should celebrate, especially not on a like on a holiday basis. So I think what those cities did and was pretty honorable.
I agree. And I think that one of the reasons why we see a change in like how we see these so-called heroes like Columbus and things in American history is because of this information age where we learn about the other side. Like when we were kids and we learned about Columbus, we didn't really think about or even been taught about the Native Americans who have been here for centuries. They're the real Americans. And we seem to never really teach that to kids, but now that we are in a period where we can learn about these things on our own, read about them, hear actual Native Americans speaking about it themselves, that gives a lot more respect to these people and these cultures.
And the best thing to do that is admitting, well, we did this wrong, let's try to fix it. Even though they did glorify Columbus and all his non-glory things, mm-hmm. they tried to fix it. They said, hey, we're going to take back your holidays, we're going to give to the situation which you actually did. So as long as we're making progress, it doesn't really matter.
When we're on the topic of sort of like idealizing of history, that's something that we have to talk about when we're thinking about that sort of thing, is that there's a phenomenon in which white people, like myself, end up talking over others who may be more qualified to talk on a topic. And something that we got to bring up is that was what we talked about before, that non-racism versus anti-racism thing. MZ is more the expert on this.
Well, I heard this man, Marlon James from The Guardian, he made a short video about the difference between non-racist and anti-racist and how we as a society don't really understand these very differing sides to the topic. So non-racist pretty much explains that you as a person, you're not racist, you don't practice racism, you don't try and be prejudiced towards different races, so therefore, you're fine with it. Like, you can sleep at night because you know you, yourself, you're not racist. On the other hand, anti-racist is when you actually do something about it. Yeah, you recognize these things exist, and you also do something in order to change it. If you're just non-racist, which a majority of us as Americans are, that is not changing anything. Yes, you need to recognize that these are problems, but you shouldn't be able to just accept it. People in general, Americans, need to understand that just sitting there, not doing anything, isn't going to solve the problem, just as wearing a pink bandana isn't going to cure breast cancer. You need to actually make a stance, do something about it, volunteer, help these people in order to actually make a change.
And non-racist, well, some people may argue, well, the problem is race relations, so the only way to solve that is just being fine with everything. Everything is fine. I can have some black friends. I can have some white friends. As long as I'm not being racist, what's the big deal?
that sort of plays into the kind of prevalent myth that it's a good idea to be colorblind. And what that means is that looking at people completely the same, no matter what, whether they're black or white or whatever race they are. Thing is, being colorblind isn't really possible because we just aren't. No matter how not racist you think you are, you're still going to think something when you see somebody who just without even realizing it.
Right, right.
So you have to realize that and own that and realize that you can do good things with that. Like, you can let people talk when they're more qualified to talk about something than you. You can try not to talk over people. You can listen to people because they have really good ideas about something that you might not have even thought of before.
And also going back to what Shahid said about, like, oh, it's not affecting me, so I don't really need to do anything about it. People also need to understand racism isn't just a problem going on in America, where we have the opportunity to speak our minds and do something about it. There are other countries all over the world where race is such a huge problem, and not only race, but every social issue. So just not doing something here, you need to do something because not many people have this opportunity.
We just got a tweet from @ HX Delante. What do you say to those who claim problems with culture appropriations are bogus because their ideas aren't property?
So cultural appropriation is a big issue that has become kind of a buzzword right now. There's this idea of you shouldn't steal somebody's culture, but it seems like Shahid has something he wants to say about it.
I do think that, you know, some ideas, they could be open and not necessarily claiming to one person or type of people. Well, if that's it, then we can go back to the non-racist, anti-racist. And I had a point was you said you can't be colorblind, but I had a question. Is having a preference being racist?
It depends. What do you mean by a preference? Do you mean like in relationships or what?
In life. If I get on, okay, this is going to be racist, but if I get on a bus and I see a majority of black people in the back, I'm going to sit in the back. Or if I go to a school and I see 3 or 4 black people, I'm going to hang out with them. Is that me being preferenceable or is that me being racist?
I mean, in that situation, that's something, your race and your culture is something that you have in common with those people. And it's kind of a touchy thing to think about because there is kind of a double standard. Because, I mean, if it's me and I see a bunch of white people hanging out and I immediately go hang out with them, that's different. So it's kind of, I'm not really sure what my opinion on that is. What about you, MC?
I think that also ties in with the whole reverse racism thing. How I think if you have a preference and... I think that's a lot to do with culture. I don't think that's necessarily like a race like preference. You're not like, oh, they're black. You're like, oh, I can like identify with these people and have things in common. So I think that's the bigger answer.
That's a really good point. And we'll make sure to get back to that after we take this short break. We'll be back with more Streaming Justice after this on Youth Express.
When the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day when the war is won.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, a youth-led discussion on civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. King, with Mirnaz, Shahid, and Abraham, and Juliet. That's me. So last time, we had a question from @historicaldilettante about cultural appropriation and whether you think that's a real thing or not. And just to provide some background, cultural appropriation is the idea that somebody can sort of misuse a piece of somebody's culture. For instance, somebody dressing up in a Native American headdress while not actually being Native American, or wearing a stereotypically Mexican costume at Halloween. And a lot of people think that that's not right, that you shouldn't use someone's culture as a costume. So what do you guys think about that?
I think it depends on where you're from and where you're at, because I know a lot of white people that are from the same neighborhood as me, the same music as me, and they might be approached or seen as, well, they're acting black, or I've known them since third grade, and they're as hood or as gangster as me, and it's nothing to do with their race or their preference. It's just that's where they're raised at. My father lived in San Diego and was surrounded by people Latino culture, and he loved listening to what did he call it? I forget, but it's just Mexican music and rolling around in Spanish, and I have no idea what they're saying, but he's jamming to it, and he's not being insensitive or anything. That's where he was raised, in San Diego.
Well, I think a big thing about cultural appropriation is, like, when you are not surrounded by these cultures and you know nothing about it and you're being sort of ignorant, I think that's where the problem arises. Like, yeah, if you are white and you live in a stereotypical black community, I don't think you know what they stand for, and you're pretty much part of their community, regardless of race. But I think the problem is whenever you are a white person and on Halloween you just wear like a Native American costume stereotypically, you don't understand what they mean and what how each piece of their outfits and their headdresses symbolize something, and they mean something very important to the Native American culture. And a lot of people just simply don't know this. They don't understand. They don't understand that each bead means something to these people. Each color represents something. And I think that's where the problem is. They're not respecting the other culture.
A lot of the discourse about cultural appropriation has to do with the idea of sharing culture versus stealing culture. Now, what Shahid was talking about before with people in his neighborhood being into some of the aspects of more black culture, that seems like it's more of a sharing thing, because both sides of the culture thing are okay with it, and they're obviously not using it for any malicious purpose. But like what MZ said about the like the costumes and stuff being sort of misused, that you don't have they don't have the perspective, they don't have the education to really use that in the proper situation.
A wise man once said, I'm joking, his name was Exhibit, the rapper. It was an MTV interview, and they're asking about Eminem. He said, how do you feel about Eminem? And he says, as long as he respects it, I can dig it. So as long as you respect my culture, I don't care. As long as you're not, like, making a satirical mock or, you know what I'm saying, not being sensitive to really what I stand for and what I can be doing. So, like, people who are, you know, do fake rap videos or something, that's, it can be funny to some people, but they'd be like, hey, that's racist. So if you can respect it, then I can dig it.
And you gotta understand the boundaries that are within certain communities. For instance, I mean, in no situation is it really ever okay for a white person to say the N-word. Mm-hmm. And people know that. That's a widely known fact. And if you know that, then why would you sort of break that cultural thing? It's mm-hmm. it's a cultural sort of taboo like any other thing.
I agree. Same with like blackface. Like, you know, that's coming from a hateful place. So when you do things like that, it's for the sole purpose to be offensive and mean.
What about whiteface? You ever watched White Chicks?
Yeah.
Is that racism or is that reverse racism?
Reverse racism is kind of a touchy topic, and it's the idea of reverse racism would be that white people can be oppressed, with finger quotes here, in the same way that black people can. And some people defend it by saying this things like, well, if there's a black entertainment network, why isn't there a white entertainment network? Or if there's a Black History Month, then why isn't there a White History Month? Well, the thing is, every month is White History Month, unfortunately. Our culture is kind of rooted in a place of whiteness, and that's the sort of, unfortunately, the base on which everything else seems to be built. So, somebody want to say something else about that?
Well, I don't believe in reverse racism. I mean,
me neither.
Me neither.
I don't really see reverse racism as like a thing, because some people would be like, there's a blackpeoplemeet.com, and then whitepeoplemeet came out, and then that was seen as an issue. Or I was seen as, if you have a preference to white people and you want to do that, then go ahead. That's all fine by you. If you want to have a preference not being racism, then yeah, you can do that.
Well, the thing, like going back to what Julia said, like our world, our society is white. We see in white. Like in the entertainment industry, there's so much backlash on like Oscars and other mm-hmm. Academy Awards about like, oh, black people are underrepresented. And I think that is genuinely an issue because we don't really see many movies where there is a specific culture being represented if it's not in a stereotypical sense.